another episode of Glow West, where we talk about sex, sexuality, and the body. Glow West is proud to be a part of the Tortoise Shack Network, and if you like the content, please rate and review, as it really does help spread the word about the podcast. Today, my guests are a married couple who are non-monogamous, and they're here to talk to me about polyamory. Kevin Patterson is the blogger behind Poly Role Models and the author of Love's Not Colorblind. His work focuses around real experiences and representation in polyamory. Dr. Antoinette Patterson is a physical therapist and geriatric clinical specialist who focuses her training and experiences to advocate for accessibility, inclusivity, and education, with a focus on the needs of people of colour within her local communities. Hi guys, thanks Amel for coming on. How are you today?
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I know there's a time difference as well, so we'll fly through and you can eat your tacos afterwards. Which is a euphemism for anything. That's fine.
I mean, it could be.
Oh, goodness.
This is the joy of sex. Everything is has a double entendre, so that's fun. So let's start with like poly 101 then. So for those who aren't aware, can you explain what the difference is between polyamory, swinging, or open relationships? Or are those terms all interchangeable for some people?
I think they all fall under the umbrella of consensual non-monogamy. But polyamory is like the basics of it is the idea of dating multiple people with the being in multiple romantic and or sexual relationships with multiple people with the consent and willingness and knowledge of everyone involved. Swinging has more of a sexual angle to it, where the idea of being in like loving or romantic relationships might be off limits to swingers. It might just be like we get together to bang and then move on with our lives. Open relationships, like, as opposed to like closed relationships. Like if I'm in a relationship with two people and we make the agreement together that none of the three of us will date outside of the three of us, that's a closed relationship. But if we allow ourselves to date outside of whatever our traditional boundary is, then that's open.
Okay, and so completely different, obviously, to just cheating. Glorified cheating, I suppose, is one of the stereotypes around poly, right?
It's kind of a funny thing that, like, people would call it glorified cheating when, like, the main component to cheating is betrayal.
And lying.
Yeah.
Which is often more hurtful than the sex.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. So back in the early days of your relationship, how did you both broach the idea of being poly with each other? Was it very soon into your relationship or after a long time?
We kind of fell backwards into polyamory and didn't really realize that's what it was that we were doing until way later. Okay. So we met in college and undergrad, and we started dating just like anyone else starts dating. You know, maybe you're dating several people at the same time until you're trying to whittle it down to the one. But very early in our relationship, we realized that we didn't really feel like we had to whittle it down to the one, that we care for each other and we love each other and we're compatible. But that didn't mean that we had to stop seeing other people. So we kind of continued down that route and little bit tripped backwards into swinging, only to realize that that really wasn't the best fit for us. We thought it was very weird that I can have sex with your partner, but we can't sit and watch a movie afterwards. Like, really? That's strange.
It's a nice practice as well. Cuddles.
And then down the line, once we had moved to the greater Philadelphia area, someone on a online dating site was reading my profile and said, you know what? It sounds like you're doing polyamory, but you never say the word polyamory. And I'm like, what's that? And run off to the Google machine, only to realize like, hey, Kev, look, we're not just making this up. This is a thing that people do. Okay. And there's other people that do it. Yeah. We should go find these people. Which led us to a deep dive into our local polyamory community.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, like we're reading books, we're meeting people, basically, we took our rudimentary ideas and like refined them because there happened to be people who have been doing it longer than us. So, yeah.
So is it easier almost to, if you're looking for another partner and you're new to the world of poly, to find someone that's more experienced, or are you both diving in as newbies, or it doesn't matter?
It gets tough because when you have an experience differential, that inherently almost gives you a little bit of a power differential within a relationship. Which if you're dating a less than ethical person, that could be a dangerous situation. Very much along the lines of when you see like men dating women who are like really, really, really younger than them with no life experience. And it's like, okay, how much do you guys like? So it's definitely one of those where, you know, as you're getting into polyamory, staying open to possibility and looking for feedback from more experienced people. But I very much subscribe to whoever is going to be your mentor in anything new should not be someone that's going to personally benefit from you being in it. So, you know, you don't want to have someone mentoring you who's also trying to get your pants. Like, yeah, it kind of
a little bit of conflict there.
Just a bit. Yeah.
And then at the same time, like, you'd want to do as much research as you can. There's a handful of really good books out. There's a lot of websites. There's a lot of online communities, and depending on where you are, there are local communities. I do a lot of research first because there are so many people who I've met along the way who said, well, you know, I was 16, 17, 18 years old. I dated somebody. I went really bad. It went really badly. And I thought, this is just what non-monogamy is. This is just what polyamory is. And I never wanted to do that again. And that's, you know, it's a shame because no one ever does that with monogamy. No one ever screws up their first monogamous relationship and decides, you know what, maybe monogamy isn't what I need in my life.
Absolutely. Like, relationships are messy a lot of the time anyway, you know, regardless of the structure of it or how many people are involved in it, because we're humans and we're messy most of the time.
Very messy. So.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I've been, like, we've been non-monogamous for almost 18 years. Like, in a couple of months, we'll be at 18 years. And I realized that, like, I can't date people who are new to polyamory. Like, it's just not, my polyamory is really chaotic, which is kind of how I like it. But that's not entry level. That's not something somebody, you know, brand new wants to get into, because they might get some bad impressions. They might be looking, there's a lot to unlearn. From like a mononormative standpoint, I'm not the person to learn that with.
No. Well, I saw on your blog, which is Poly Role Models, you had a quote about what's going on now. This may or may not be out of date, but you said that, so you've got one other loving, committed relationship, and you currently entertain a few more casual or long distance or friends with benefits dating relationships that activate or deactivate. Now, to me, that sounds like a lot of timetable management. Like, do you have like a spreadsheet? Yeah. Like, how do you manage your diary?
Google Calendar is your friend.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everything gets color coded on the calendar with
invites. I was just about to ask my color codes. Yeah. Well, because that must help. Because, you know, if it's like Wednesday is your day, do you have like, yeah, how does that work? How's the schedule part work?
We try to stay a little bit flexible in general. I mean, these current pandemic times have kind of shifted how we've been negotiating and handling our time. But non-pandemic time, we try to stay very flexible about balancing who's going out, who's coming in, who's spending time away, so that we try to make it as equitable as possible for, you know, each of us to get time with our respective partners while also balancing the time that we need to spend with each other and with the rest of our family.
Yeah.
Because we do have two children, and so we need to make sure that they are being cared for and attended to, and their needs are being met as well. So, a lot of juggling.
Yeah, and like, parenting is hard enough as it is, let alone everything else, life on top of it. So, yeah. And do you foresee yourselves, is it a situation where you have other people around your children, or is everything kept really separate? Because I know there's obviously different family structures and, you know, a hippie commune, I'm imagining, but something like that.
Well, the we keep everything very age appropriate with our family or with our kids. And like, I come from a culture where having other adults around kids is not like a taboo thing. Like, I I actually just lost somebody today that was my dad's sister, who was like a second mom to me because she needed a place to be coming in from out of the country. So like, there was always somebody else in the house. There was always somebody who was just off the boat, somebody who, you know, who needed a place to stay for a while. So like, having adults around kids isn't really a shocker for me. But we keep it really age appropriate. Like, it's almost as if saying like, hey, we've got friends around. Meanwhile, our kids can pick up on the familiarity between us. So like, I can't pass somebody off as just a friend, but like, I treat it like just a friend. So my partners will spend time around my kids if I'm around my kids, or Antoinette's partners will spend time around her kids, you know, while she's around the kids. They know who they are. They know what's going on. They're, you know, nothing's a secret, but we're not going to be like, okay, well, you know, see you kids, we're off to an orgy. It's going to be, you know, yeah. I'm off to spend some time with my friends.
Yeah. The other piece of it is that, you know, we make it very clear that I'm still mommy and this is still daddy. We're not looking for surrogate parents. We're not looking for someone to step in and take my place. And we give our partners the ability to opt in and opt out of how much engagement they'd like to have with our children. Okay. And the same goes for our children.
Yeah.
So, you know, I both have some partners who are like, what are children? Children are strange beings. I don't want anything to do with these children. And so, you know, they don't want to interact other than saying hello and goodbye. Whereas we have other partners who are very much involved in their lives and enjoy taking on a more involved role to their comfort and desire. So,
yeah. And like, the kids end up being the priority there, because like, regardless of what we do with our calendars, it's always a matter of who's with the kids, who's spending time with the kids, who's spending intentional time with the kids.
And what do the kids need?
Yeah. Like, somebody wanted to see me, this is like sometime last year, somebody wanted to spend some time with me, and they're like, well, I don't really want to spend any time around their kids. And I'm like, well, my kids don't go to bed until 7:00. So whatever thing you want to do, if you want to come over, you're going to have to come over after that time. Otherwise, it's just not going to work out. Like, I'm not going to put my kids to bed early just because you don't want to meet them. Like, no, they have a priority. Yeah. This is where they live.
That's a bit unreasonable, a request. So, yeah. And what about extended family, though? Because I have some poly friends up the north of Ireland, and they're always saying, well, a triple, I suppose, is more a trendy word, I suppose, now. But they're saying, you know, it took them a long while to figure out, who do you bring home to the parents to meet, and then what happens to the other person? So when you're talking about important family occasions, does another person get brought along, and how does your extended family deal with that, or is that an issue for you guys?
It depends on the family,
right?
Like with my family is very not okay with my polyamory, and the only thing, my mother is really not okay with my polyamory. When I've brought other partners around the rest of my family, it's just been like, okay, well, this is somebody that Kevin's with. And they were given that sort of respect of, let me respect this person because they're with Kevin. Whereas my mother, not so much. So if it's like a family occasion, a family reunion, and a holiday, something where I'd be around my parents, I know that it's either I'm going there with Antoinette or I'm not going there at all. You know, or I can't bring somebody else. Antoinette's family feels differently, though.
All right. Once I came out as polyamorous to my family, you know, they had a lot of, you know, questions because they didn't really understand what it was and what this meant. I think the overarching theme was, this isn't some crazy thing Kevin's making you do, is it? Like, this is your choice. But once they understood it, at the end of the day, they realized, they were like, it doesn't really matter what we think about it. You are an adult. We love you. You're an adult. These are your choices to make, and we will support you in your choices as long as you're not screwing up the babies. I came out as polyamorous to them before I really had a regular partner at that time. So for them, it was still like a very theoretical thing that they had to get used to. And then once I had somebody that was serious, and it's the same decision that you make when you're monogamous, is it, this person's important to me. I think this person's going to stick around for a while. So maybe this important person should start to meet the rest of the important people in my life. And my family's been super supportive and understanding. my uncle got married, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
Yeah, like the, yeah,
3 or 4 years ago. Yeah. And it was so sweet because he sends an invitation that says, and then he gives me a call and he says, how many? And I'm like, huh? And he said, how many? He's like, I know it's you and Kevin, and I know Kevin's dating someone seriously, and you're dating someone seriously. Am I missing anybody? Are you bringing the kids? And so we literally had 6 of us.
Yeah.
We took up an entire table.
Oh,
because my uncle, yeah. And my uncle was like, I'm not going to force you to exclude your loved ones in a celebration of my love for my loved ones.
That's
so, you know, and it's fantastic. So my other partner, he gets invited to Thanksgiving. He gets invited to Christmas. You know, the question for me when I'm invited to family events is it just Kevin, or is it Kevin and Pace, or is it, you know,
yeah.
It's how many extras, not the assumption of a plus one.
Nice. But, you know, and your work, you work around geriatric care as well. So how does poly translate into geriatric care? You know, if someone's in a nursing home and you've got X amount of partners coming in, is that a barrier in some cases if the staff don't understand what poly actually is, or do people have to basically pick one partner and that's it? And it's a, you know, a miserable experience maybe.
Well, it's one of the things that, you know, when looking at people that unfortunately have to move into nursing homes and places where they're receiving care, is that in general, they're not very open and accepting of human sexuality, period.
Yeah, for sure.
Whether it's monogamy or polyamory. Mm-hmm. So we see situations where even monogamous married couples have to fight to have a room together. Because they're saying, well, we can't have men and women in the same room. And it's like, hi, they've been married for 70 years. They've been sleeping in the same room for 70 years. And now all of a sudden you want to separate them? Like, why?
Yeah,
so there's a lot of places where, you know, they forget the fact that just because you're growing older doesn't necessarily mean that your need for connection and sexuality and romance disappears. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, in general, for any type of sexual or romantic orientation, being in an institutionalized setting of that sort becomes challenging on all fronts.
Yeah, absolutely. And just that missing that level of kindness that we'd expect, you know, that people should have at the end of their life, and compassion with their loved one as well. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. You mentioned there just a bit earlier about the idea of like, oh, is this something that Kevin's forcing you into? And I think that's a fairly prevalent stereotype, isn't it? That the woman has to go along with this, and really she doesn't want anything to do with it, and it's all the man, which is, that's so many stereotypes about male sexuality and women put up with sex and men do sex. So is that a common assumption in Philly? I know I think in Ireland that would be a pretty common stereotype.
Right. The picture you often see when people think of polyamory are the society of conventionally attractive man with 2 conventionally attractive female partners who are both bisexual and a closed triad, which is like, nope, that's actually like the least prevalent way that polyamory is practiced in my experience. And so, again, we're challenging a lot of the already established stereotypes about male sexuality and female sexuality, or even just even the fact that they're using a binary. It's a different soapbox to get on. But, you know, this feeling that people approach polyamory as a monogamy plus one situation, where they just want to have one more person in, but it's still going to be a closed scenario where no one else is involved and just these 3 people. And it's very damaging to people's autonomy, to their expression. And it sets women up to feel like they have to be performatively bisexual if they're going to participate in polyamory, when that's very much not the case. And it doesn't push male-identified folks to challenge some of the societally ingrained lessons about what is manhood, what is acceptable. And when you're operating from the standpoint of that women are property, that once you get into a relationship, you have ownership over another person, you have to challenge all those pieces to be successful in polyamory. No one owns me. It's I choose to share my time and space with you. And I can choose to share my time and space with whoever I please. and multiple people at the same time. And so you have to really divorce yourself from this ownership mentality for this to work.
And like from the other end of that, it's not just that I have to divorce that concept. I have to like disabuse it from other people. Where when I got started, most of my partners were cisgender women. Now it's sort of a hodgepodge. It's sort of a hodgepodge of like the people in my life. Like I'm dating several like non-binary folks. I'm all over the place. But like whenever somebody saw that I was dating multiple women, a lot of their ideas was like, oh wow, Kev's forming a harem. You know, like that's not anything of like what I'm doing. They would just assume that I'm lording over my partners, when it's like, well, that's not what I'm here for. Like, it's not my place to try to restrict their autonomy. It's not my place to sort of tell them what to do with themselves, with their bodies. I'd also have people to sort of assuming that like my partners couldn't have other partners outside of myself. And it's like, well, have you met any of the people that I'm dating? Because if you have, like, you'd know, like, I couldn't restrict them even if I wanted to. That's like, even if that was something I was into, that's not something they'd be into.
Yeah, it's so, an extra challenge on top of the timetabling.
Yeah, and like I've got monogamous friends who, like, upon learning about like my non-monogamy, they'd just be like, "Well, I could see you doing it, Kev, but like I could see me doing it with multiple women, but like I couldn't possibly do that where my women had other male partners." Or, and I'm like, "Well, I don't see the women that I'm dating as prizes. I don't see them as own property. They are autonomous human beings living their best lives, and every day they choose to be with me." So, like, tough break, buddy.
That's like an element of misogyny that is that of like you said, like all the women as prizes, and it's never like, oh, I could have all the women, but my partner can't. And I've seen that dynamic in a couple of people as well. So I think that's there. But yeah, the misogyny part is something I suppose like for newer people to watch out for then, you know, if you're not used to polyamory and you're not used to talking so openly and honestly about sex and about relationships and what a healthy relationship is, and then you have to throw in poly and misogyny and everything else into that. It's like, how do you start figuring out how to communicate about that in a healthy, safe way and a fun way?
And that's what becomes challenging, is that there's a lot of toxic relationship tropes that are spun around monogamy that are not good for me. And then when you carry those into a situation where now you have more than one partner, it just magnifies it. Because you often see these tropes where it's just like, jealousy is a good thing. You want him to be like mad that you're with other people. Like, no, that's not healthy. It's not healthy at all. And, you know, you have, as individuals, you know, you should be able to have friends. You should be able to spend time with other people. And when you have a situation where, you know, someone is isolating you from your community and from your friends because you're in a monogamous relationship, that's abuse. And so if you're coming into it as feeling like you have to monopolize someone's time and energy for everything, you know, you have to let go of those pieces because it's not healthy. You should still be able to have friends, other friends outside of your relationship, even if it's monogamous. And so to try to pull that into polyamory is just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, that sounds messy. And then on the, well, maybe not so flip side of it, the accusation that you're greedy. Like, do you get that a lot?
I share a lot. I don't know what you're talking about. the idea that we're greedy, like, it's, well, one, it doesn't make sense in that, like, I'm not restricting anybody. Like, I'm not hoarding partners, you know. I'm not keeping the people that I'm dating away from anybody. But, like, the idea that you're only supposed to be with one person ever, we don't do that with anything else in our lives. Like, you don't do that with your friends. You don't do that with your family. Like, anybody who has a group of friends already understands polyamory, where if you've got a group of friends, you know full well, like, that you're not jealous that they hang out with one another away from you. You're not jealous that that they've got their own lives. You know that when it's time to go party, you're going to bring that party friend, but that bookie friend, you're going to leave that friend at home. You know, when it's time to like when it's time to go see a Marvel movie, you're going to bring your geeky friend, but that party friend that doesn't watch TV at all, you're going to leave that friend at home. Everybody has these people in their lives that they love for different, that they love equally, but for different reasons. And then when you try to do that in a romantic or a sexual sense, it's like, oh, wow, that's very strange. It's like, no, it's really pretty standard to the human experience. It's just that we block off this one thing and say that this one thing is different than how we do everything else. No, not really.
Yeah, and it's really hard for one person to meet every single need that you have as a person. Like, that's a lot of pressure to live up to.
It is. It's just unrealistic. Like, I love my wife. We've been together for 18 years. If one day I need somebody to pick up a PlayStation controller and play a game with me, she is not my woman.
Just not. I don't even know how to work the thing.
Yeah, and if one day if she picks up some rope and she wants to tie somebody up, nah, not really. You know that I'm like, or if she wants to be tied up, I should say. I don't know how to tie any rope. I don't think I'm gonna learn how to tie any rope. No, you know, no offense to anybody who likes tying. Good on you. My wife's awesome at it. That's just not my thing. If she was dependent on me for her kink experience, or if I was dependent on her for my co-op gaming experience, we would be very dissatisfied with our relationship. Instead, we do that with other people in our lives, and sometimes even romantic partners.
Do you think that can lead to a lot of frustration, and that's when people engage in cheating and that kind of sneaking around? And if they only had like the option of poly, like maybe they can say, okay, this is how I can actually get my needs met instead of hurting someone else? Or how's
that? Yes, work? No.
Yeah.
I feel like there's some people that cheat because they get off on the lying and the deception and the thrill of trying to do something behind someone's back. And those people are the people that cheat when they're polyamorous too.
Yeah.
And yes, it is possible to cheat in a polyamorous relationship. But if it's more a situation of, you know, things have grown and changed and you want to try to find a new normal and expand out, then yes, polyamory can be a viable solution. But the thing with polyamory, I always tell people, it doesn't fix your relationship problems with the person that you're already in a relationship with.
No, it exposes if
anything, it magnifies them. Yeah. So you still have to put in the work to improve your relationship with the first person. Whether or not you're going to have a relationship with the second, third, fourth, or fifth person.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. And then you wrote as well about like the idea of poly snobbery. So it's like how you do poly right. And I suppose you see that in a few things like kink snobbery and, you know, BDSM snobbery of like, this is how you tie properly and whatever. So what's the stereotypes of how you do poly right?
I see people who try to like gatekeep polyamory around how sexual it is. Like my polyamory is really sexual. It just is. It's a way that I form connections. It's a way that that I build the bonds with the people that I'm with. And I know that there are people who say, well, if you're putting that much focus on sex, it's not really love. And it's like, well, one, you can have both, and two, the human experience isn't limited to, you know, a step A, step B, step C process. Like, it's different for all of us. I see that all the time, and I bristle against that, especially since the same folks who would be snobs around that aren't necessarily snobs around asexual polyamory, you know? And that's asexual polyamory is completely valid. Some people just want romantic relationships. They don't really want the sexual component for one reason or another. That's valid. The flip is valid as well.
I've heard a lot about like hierarchical relationships in poly of like, this is your primary and your secondary. But you guys talk a lot about relationship anarchy. So what's relationship anarchy?
The way I describe it is, the people that I meet, our relationships are formed just sort of organically based on whatever makes sense for us. And that's like romantically or sexually or socially, logistically. Basically, they are who they are and I am who I am. And the places where those two things meet, that's what our relationship is. We don't have to like have a pre-established structure. The labels don't really so much matter as long as we're on the same page. And if I change or they change, the relationship changes. Even if that means the relationship becomes like more or less invested or more or less involved.
That sounds more, yeah, just more natural and less stress-free rather than having to say, okay, you're now going to be this particular person in my harem that you don't have. But yeah.
I had, I was seeing, like, I've got a friend where, I had expressed a romantic interest and she wasn't interested. And I was like, okay, that's cool. You know, no big, you know, no harm, no foul. We still hung out as friends. And, one day we're just sitting around watching a movie and she takes my hand and places it directly on her crotch. And I'm like, okay, I guess we're doing this now. And we began like a sexual relationship for a while. And then like, that sort of petered out when she got serious with a new guy. And then that guy fell away. And then like, we began a sexual relationship again for a bit. And I was like, we never really sat down and had like a long conversation about who we were to each other. We just sort of like our relationship just sort of fluctuated as it went. And it was what it was, and it was valid the whole time. Like, we were always on the same page. It was just, okay, well, things changed. Then they changed back, and then they changed again, and that was cool. Some people feel like they need a level of structure around their polyamory for whatever reason, to keep things organized, to keep, like, insecurities at bay, whatever it is. Like, I don't subscribe to the kind of gatekeeping that way, because like I don't know really who that helps. I don't know what that solves.
Yeah, just causes more arguments, I guess. So yeah, well speaking of gatekeeping, you know, there's racial gatekeeping as well. So you wrote your book Love's Not Colorblind, and that looks at that intersection between race and polyamory. And there's a quote from you about the stereotype of polyamory being, quote, some white people shit. So is it like predominantly white, the scene where you are, or what is that intersection actually like in reality?
So the thing about polyamory is that like polyamory one way or the other costs. It costs money, like it costs time, and if it, in a capitalist society, if you're not making money, you're spending money, you're wasting money, you know, you're losing money. Polyamory being what it is, it's always going to be more of a luxury for people who aren't as marginalized by way of class. And that's sort of a thing for everything. Like we're in America, that's sort of a thing with everything. And also representation wise, where if I turn on the TV and every time I see polyamory represented is white folks, it becomes really easy to just think this is something for white folks. This isn't something black people do. And I wanted to make sure to speak on that because it doesn't have to be that way. Which is why I wrote Love's Not Colorblind. Like I wrote it not just to spotlight things like the inherent biases that appear in our communities, but also like ways to solve that, ways to get better around it. Our local scene, like I wrote Love's Not Colorblind after spending roughly 2 years feeling like the token black guy in my local community, where I'd go to events and like there'd be like three black people and they all came in my car. It'd be like me, my wife, and one of her friends, you know? And I didn't like that feeling. So I started talking about it. I started going to education. Like the first time we met, I was actually the second place I had ever spoken about race and polyamory. And then I write the book and the community starts changing. Like right now we have a POC exclusive polyamory group for our local community. We didn't really have a lot of that. Where I hosted the first handful of POC exclusive events in my local community, and they were like they were the first ones ever, and they filled up. They filled up with people I had never seen in the mainstream local community. You know?
Wow. Well, they probably because had of the experience of being token. Sorry, Santa.
Yes. What I was going to say, because of the race, the systemic racism that's inherent in our American culture, there the stakes of being openly polyamorous are higher for people who are POC or who are of a lower socioeconomic class. I realize we both are privileged in the fact that we have careers that our personal lives don't matter for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, no one cares that I have several partners. What they care is, oh, you have that specialty and you're licensed and you show up on time to treat these patients. Okay.
Yeah.
That's where it begins and ends for me. So the fact that I've got a picture of my husband and a picture of my boyfriend, both up on my wall in my office, although a couple of people blink for a second, it doesn't negatively impact me keeping a job or doing my job. Not a lot of people can say that. Mm-hmm. So it becomes very something that people feel like they have to hide and keep underground for fear of the reprisals that would happen for them in the society. Add to the fact that you don't see people that look like us being represented as doing polyamory. And so people don't even realize that it's an option, which is why representation is so important. We need people to see that, yes, there are people that look just like you who are doing this thing. It is a possibility for you. The other piece of it is that due to a lot of the things that happen in our society, there are a lot of POC who don't want to date white people. Like, I don't need racism in my romance. Sorry.
Yeah.
And so that's another layer where they don't feel comfortable being in predominantly white spaces because of the racism and that happens in those spaces. Being tokenized, fetishized. When you're in a space where you're trying to learn and grow and find romantic partners, this is the anti-fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. And do you think stereotypes about, you know, the hyper sexuality of black people, you know, like black women can be sexualized to an extreme level. Do you think that plays into the idea of polyamory as well? You know, those stereotypes that white people might have about black people and polyamory?
Yeah, basically whatever brand of white supremacy that you can come across can find its way into polyamory. Like, it's just a societal thing. Like, it's not something that there's no doorway at polyamory that blocks any of that stuff out. And that does make dating difficult at times. Like, I've got to do a lot of math in my head when I'm talking to somebody about how much of my humanity do they actually see when we're talking. I've been in spaces where I'm hanging out with people and we're all politically minded, we're all geeks, we're all creatives, we're all polyamorous, but the only way they engage me in conversation is about my race, as if I'm supposed to be teaching a class on it. I'm like, all right, well, I understand whether or not you think you're welcoming me by bringing up my race over and over and over. I understand that you only see me as my race, and I'm going to find a classy way to exit this conversation and never hang out with y'all again.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. You don't even have to be classy about that. Just tell them to fuck off.
Well, and that's a what's it called? And like that, and that's actually a representation thing for me, where like my wife and I, by whatever bullshit standard, my wife and I look normal. We make a certain amount of money. We both have advanced college degrees. We have glasses. We look very intelligent. We're very attractive people.
I mean, all of that is correct. So yeah. Yeah.
But like, if we look like quote unquote the weirdos, our ability to get whatever messages across would be limited in a way. Like, that's a privilege that we have that we try to weaponize to our causes. If there's already a pre-established stereotype of the angry black woman and the angry black man, and if somebody came at me in a fetishizing way and I told them off in the way that I'd like to tell them off, it's going to be less about them being, you know, being shitty and more about me being the angry black guy. So I've got to find these, I've got to do this in a way that doesn't like dismiss my message. And it sucks that it has to be that way. And some people disregard that. And I applaud them and I support them. I do it my way. They do it their way, and I feel like since we're all going in the same direction, Like, there are people who watch my work and think that I'm going to be too, and feel like I'm too respectful. And I appreciate that. There's somebody who is less respectful than I am. And for that person, it's going to, that less respectful message is going to carry them further. Meanwhile, for me, there are people who resonate with my methods just the same. So yeah, like, I'm not going to tell people off in that way. Someone else is. We're both valid.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that respectability that you said you have, that privilege, you know, you're on that big chat show, the ABC. So obviously we don't have that in Ireland, but it was a fairly big show in the States, right?
Cameron Hall.
So like, what was the response you got after that? So obviously you went on and said, hey, we're a poly couple. To what gasps or salacious cheers in the audience. But what was the response you got afterwards, especially from the Black community?
I'm going to start by saying that my wife is smarter than I am. My wife, she unplugged. She unplugged almost completely from the response. Okay. And like the community response was incredible. The community showed up and all of the social media posts surrounding the Tamron Hall appearance, polyamorous all over the place showed up to say that we did a good job. We represented ourselves very well. They shouted down a lot of the loudest dissenters. They showed up. They really did. Meanwhile, from outside of the community, the focuses were, my wife has short hair, so obviously she's the butch, she's in charge, and I'm just a punk who allows her to sleep with other men. Okay. Especially because I had on nail polish that day, so obviously I'm just a sissy, who allows this because I can't control my woman.
I mean, nail polish is so important.
Right. And it was mind-boggling to me because I was just like, oh, so he must be gay because he's got nail polish on. And I'm like, he's sitting here with his two assigned female at birth partners?
Yeah. Like, really? I was on stage with two women, but I must be gay because I had on nail polish. And my wife, who was there with two male partners, must be gay because she had short hair.
There's a lot of cognitive dissonance in that reaction. Wow.
How many women must I collect to not be gay?
15 is the exact answer.
Oh goodness. I'd be scared, but my number might be there.
Well, like, so that's cool because they let you bring out then everybody, so everyone got to have their say as well. That sounds really refreshing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Was it live or was it edited?
It was live. Yeah. And like, I feel like we did a really good job. Like, I kept reminding everybody involved, my wife, my girlfriend, my metamor, for anyone who's listening who doesn't know, a metamor is my partner's partner that I'm not involved with. I kept saying, like, pick and pop. Just like, they're going to ask you a question. They're not going to give you a chance to like give you a whole lot of detail, to give a lot of details. They're not going to let you be your full unedited self. Just give media friendly sound bites. Answer it really well, really quickly, under 5 seconds. And if you watch the clip, like, that's exactly what it is.
Wow. Yeah, that's the joy of media is, like, you know, anything shorter than those few seconds and you're going to get chopped to bits. So, well, like, yeah. And that happened to you guys with the New York Times piece where it was like they used your photo to represent polyamory, but then essentially cut you out of the whole piece.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Talk to us about that experience.
So,
like, bullshit.
The New York Times, they spoke to us. They spoke to my wife for, I think, like 2 hours, and they spoke to me for like 3 or 4 hours. They came to our house. They took hundreds of pictures all over our house. And it felt like they picked the very saddest picture of us, where it looks like I messed up and my wife is getting ready to leave me. Like, that's what the picture looks like.
Oh, God.
The only parts in that article that have us in it is my wife saying that her and my then girlfriend could raise the kids without me, which at the time was true, and me saying that I didn't like people parking in my parking spot. Now, I looked at that article was 13,000 words. the words queer, trans, lesbian, bisexual never appear anywhere in that article.
Wow.
The word gay appears, I think, 7 times, like mostly in reference to sex advice columnist Dan Savage, but also in reference to like one dude's name who's like, you know, Dr. Gaylord something or other.
Okay.
And Jesus. It was this, I mean, like,
the entire article was about a couple that was cheating.
Yeah.
That they conflated with polyamory.
Yeah.
And then they took really sad pictures of actual polyamorous people to put in the article to make it look like it was inclusive when it wasn't.
Exactly.
It was very telling that the main couple that they decided to focus on for this article wouldn't even use their names.
Or their faces.
But people who were openly polyamorous and willing to share, they picked crappy pictures of us just to make it look like they were inclusive.
If I remember it right.
Tokenization.
Yep. At its highest form.
At its highest form.
If I remember it right, it was something about like, it was like a hetero passing couple where the husband says like, we're not doing so well. Do you want to open up our relationship? And the wife says, I'm not interested in that. But then she starts cheating. And when she gets caught, she's like, well, isn't this what you wanted? And the guy she was cheating with was also cheating on like a terminally ill wife or like a bedridden, cancer stricken wife or something like that. It was a mess. And they used us. They used us really poorly.
That's like all the ingredients of misery just thrown in. But it's ridiculous because that article on itself could be 12,000 words and then poly could be 12,000 words. Like, you don't have to squish it all into one really badly written article for that point.
Jeez, so geez. you asked us for a photo and my wife sent you a photo. So, all right.
It's so cute. That'll be on the
there's backstory to that. Like the pictures, the picture they used in that New York Times article, it's so sad and so depressing that some evangelical Christian groups have been attaching that picture to like these really sad stories about like henpecking wives and set upon husbands who abandon their families. But you know, it's like these really ridiculous stories, and they've been using our photos.
Yeah, so apparently I cheated and I had 3 sons, and he's not the father in one of them. And then in another one, I forced him to put his parents in a nursing home, and in a bad nursing home so that they're mistreated and all these things. What was some of the other ones?
I don't know. It doesn't
matter. They attach this super sad picture to
you. So you've turned into like a stock image.
Yeah.
When that New York Times article came out and we were so upset with it, I immediately wrote a response picture or a response piece. And my wife and I got dressed in the same clothes from the New York Times article. And we took a much happier picture, which is the one that we sent to you. So that's part of that, that article. Right. Meanwhile, on the flip side, the Philadelphia Inquirer wrote a piece about our local polyamory community where the writer just got out of her own way. She just asked us questions and let the story be the story. She didn't try to steer it. She didn't try to create a narrative that went and wedged polyamory in it. She was just like, tell me about your community. Tell me about your lives. Tell me about this book you're writing. And when it came out, my local polyamory community added hundreds of new members over the next 2 months, and mostly people of color. Like two-thirds of the new additions were people of color. It catapulted a lot of what we were doing here in the Philadelphia area.
We made the front page with the cheesiest picture of us ever.
It was such a good picture.
Aww, so cute. I hope you have a frame somewhere in your house.
I actually do. Yeah, we do.
Yes.
Which was a gift from the local polyamory group. They got the newspaper article and they framed it up for them.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so lovely. Oh, well, that's like that positive representation and all the labor that you're doing has actual positive impacts. It's not being chopped up and used for misery photos. Jesus. Well, the evangelicals have an interesting imagination for a lot of
people. Yeah.
Gosh. Okay, we might wrap up in a little bit, but just your a few words of advice just for newbies who are curious about dipping their toes or other body parts into the field of polyamory. Where are they going to get started? Obviously, your blog, which is number one. But what tips would you give them to start out with?
I'd say to research, just research, because there's so many mistakes that we get. Like, we get so much weird programming from like pop culture and Disney movies, and I'm not hating on Disney movies. I love Disney movies. But we get like, and even from some of our modeling from older folks and parents, we get so much weird programming from some of that stuff that entering into non-monogamy, bringing that baggage with you, is not going to be a good trip. I'd say, like, read through a lot of the books, read through a lot of the blogs, like, learn about people's experiences. Like, you don't need to rush into non-monogamy only to make the same mistakes that 1,000 other people made before you. Make all new mistakes and then talk about it and let people learn from your experiences, but do that first.
And I would say, be prepared to own your own shit.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be work. There's going to be a lot of learning and unlearning of toxic behaviors that need to be done. And if you're not prepared to take a good, hard look at yourself and say, how can I do better, be better, then it's going to be a lot harder for you.
Oh, I got one more. Be prepared, be fluid. A lot of people enter into non-monogamy with an idea of exactly what their non-monogamy should look like. And that's not how it works. Mike Tyson has a quote that I love where he's like, everybody has a game plan till they get in the ring and get punched in the mouth. That's how polyamory works, where like you've got a lot of us come into it with a lot of these high-minded ideas and rules and structures. And then you add a human being to that and it throws it on its head. And then you don't know really what to do with yourself. Be prepared to like change your plans.
I mean, that just sounds like good life advice all around, let alone relationship advice. So, yeah, that sounds awesome. Brilliant. Where can people find you if they're looking for you?
I'm Poly Role Models on everything. I'm Poly Role Models on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. My Patreon is Poly Role Models. My Venmo, my Cash App. I'm Poly Role Models on everything.
Excellent. And Antoinette, are you as crazy about social media?
Not at all.
It's probably healthy. Yeah, definitely. All right, listen, guys, thank you so much. I mean, I could talk to you for hours because you're just such a wealth of knowledge. And I'm almost inspired, but my husband's a bit too lazy and he's scared of the Google Calendar aspect of things. But we'll see. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing your knowledge. And you're just such lovely people. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Much appreciated.
And thanks everyone for listening. And again, if you like the content, please pop over to iTunes and rate and review. And again, you can find us on social media and Twitter. We're at glow_west_ and on Instagram it's glow west insta, where I do little competitions and little giveaways, and that's kind of fun. And again, if you want to support the work that the Tortoise Shack is doing, we're on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And I look forward to chatting to you next week. Bye.